Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous.
Hello, and welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, the criminal podcast. I'm Liz Hedgecock, and with me I have Mike Jackson.
Hi Liz, how are you?
I am fine, thank you very much.
Great.
You may have noticed that somebody is missing. Unfortunately, Carol is not feeling well and not really able to talk well enough to participate in the podcast. So we've had a chat with her beforehand and we will try and incorporate what we can of what she said.
And very foolishly, she's left us in charge.
I know. It feels uncommonly spacious in here because normally we're kind of sort of squished round the table slightly, but yes.
So I think poor Carol will be listening to this and think, oh dear, what have I let those
I
two
know,
up to?
I know, this is what happens when I leave them. Yeah, yeah. Scary. Yeah. So today, subject for the podcast is train and travel, a mystery. So why train and travel? I can think of a few reasons. First of all, some examples of mysteries that take place on a train or while travelling. Do you have any, Mike?
Well, the obvious one
Mike
is
has a list.
Murder on the Orient Express, of course.
Indeed.
With our friend Agatha.
Yes, a favourite of a lot of people, I must admit. It's a great, great book, great story.
Another one, I've heard of this story, but I don't think I've, in fact, I know I haven't read it. And it's Strangers on a Train by Patricia Highsmith.
Ah, yes. And didn't Alfred Hitchcock make the movie
That's
of
right.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've read The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith, and I love that. So I need to get hold of Strangers on a Train, definitely.
I've heard of this one. Apparently it's where two strangers meet on a train and agree to swap murders.
Ah,
which sounds
nice.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, and the murder swapping is it's a device I've used myself, to be quite honest.
Yes.
And yeah, I've seen it in other books as well, including quite a recent popular one. So
there was that television program recently. I know we're going off away from books.
Well, we are allowed. I mean, it is generally criminal activity of a fictional nature.
About a train that had been virtually taken over by AI. And it was speeding from one end of the country to the other, and nobody could stop it. And they were having to move
like speed, but with a train.
Move other
presumably
trains.
Presumably without Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. And also there were murders happening on the train as well. All sorts of intrigue, obviously, happening on the train. Quite fascinating.
You'll get me on that train after that.
No.
No. Worrying.
Give me time and I might even remember what it was called.
But okay.
It was on recently. I know that.
Yeah. I was thinking of, I think there's The Mystery of the Blue Train as well.
Right.
The Girl on the Train, of
yes,
course.
Yes, Girl on the Train.
Famously.
Yeah, have you? I've not. Again, it's another one I've not read. Have you read that one?
I have not read that one. I should do because I have it. I have it sitting on the shelf, but I have not got round to it. Is it Sundoku I'm thinking of, which is the hobby of buying books and not actually knowing when you'll read them, but buying them as a separate hobby? And I feel I have that. It's kind of like art materials.
I always used to do that with books, but I tend to. I think I may have said this before. I tend not to read as much nowadays as I used to. I tend to
You're a listener, aren't you?
Audio. But again, I do the same thing. I've got a series of audio books sitting there waiting to be listened to. So it's just like collecting paperbacks, except these are all audio files.
And occasionally I feel very guilty because I reread a book. And I think I could be reading a new book. I could be reading one of the books that are waiting for me. But, you know, here I am rereading one of the ones on my shelves.
Now, my wife is an avid reader. And I'm talking about she can get through, I don't know how many. In a month, she'll probably get 3, 4, 5 books she'll go through. And but she keeps a notebook. And every book she reads, she dates when she read it and she puts some comments down there.
Oh, wow.
Because quite often she'll come across a book. Because you know how the books... They change the covers.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So
couldn't possibly comment. No. Some of mine are on their third now. So
she'll come across a book and think, oh, I've not read this. But then she checks in the book and think, oh, yes, I did. I read it 6 years ago and it was not very good or it was very good or whatever.
Yeah,
but,
or when they changed the title of it. Which
yes,
is,
yeah, yes. Yeah. But she's very methodical like that.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not.
But I was thinking about, because I think we said train mysteries originally. I thought, well, what about other...
Yes.
Forms of transport. So one of the ones I was thinking of is Death in the Clouds, which is another Agatha book, which is set on a plane.
Oh, right.
Yes. And I was also thinking about Books on Ships.
Yes. Yeah. And again, Agatha, when you got The Nile, Murder on the Nile?
Death on the Nile.
Death on the Nile, rather. Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose it's because all these, you know, whether it's a plane, whether it's a boat or a train, they're all like a locked room mystery, aren't they?
Yes. I have that written on my notes. I've had Under Certain Conditions, locked room mystery. Yes, absolutely, with a plane, because there is no way that anyone else can sneak on. No.
It's not a case of saying, you know, excuse me, can you stop the plane? I want to get off.
Yes. I mean, unless, you know, someone's managed to get themselves into the luggage rack, which seems highly doubtful.
Yeah.
But yes, I've actually got my edition of Death in the Clouds with me. And I'm showing it to Mike now. You see, it's even got...
You've got a plan of the...
You've got a plan of the aeroplane with little seat numbers and who's in which seat, which is fabulous.
And a very small plane, by the looks of it, with a number of seats on there.
Yeah, well, this is the rear car of the Prometheus.
Oh, right.
Back when planes had names. So, yeah, there's the door to the front car. There's a pantry. There's two loos. And there are 18 seats in total on this, plus a cupboard for rugs.
And I suppose if we take this whole idea of transport, there will be sort of the sci-fi stories where things happen on spaceships.
Yes.
I'm thinking of some of the Star Trek stories that I've watched in the past, where you're often getting people getting killed and what have you. Again, yes. Whole locked room idea, because they can't go anywhere.
Yes.
Right? You know, it has to be solved by the people in that situation.
Yeah. I think the thing that I sort of, when I was thinking about, well, why are these popular? Why would you set your book or your story on a plane or a train or a cruise ship or a big boat or whatever? And I think the word that came to mind was quite often glamour, you know, in that you have that exotic setting. And also, presumably, there's a destination.
Yes.
And there's an embarkation point. Yeah. So presumably people are on there for a reason.
And you've also, the group of people who are on there are a really mixed bag of people, aren't they? They're all going somewhere for a reason. They've all bringing all sorts of baggage with them, and I don't mean physical baggage, but mental baggage with them.
Yes, because they all have a purpose for going, and they could be quite different. So, Death in the Clouds. I think they're coming back from a resort, Le Pinay, I think it is in France, and so you have the passenger list. So you have Madame Giselle, James Ryder, the Duponts, who I think are archaeologists or something. You've got Hercule Poirot.
Of course.
Yeah, I think we've met him before. Dr. Bryant, Norman Gale, the Countess of Horbury. Very nice. And Jane Grey, who I remember from perusing the first few pages of this, is a hairdresser who's won £100 on the Irish sweep. And she's decided to spend some of it on going to Le Pinay because that's where her clients go. And she wants to try it for herself and just have that little bit of luxury.
It's what Agatha did, didn't she? In as much as whether it's Death on the Nile, whether it's this one on the plane, they're all for people with money. You know, the crowd that gathers together invariably either dukes, duchesses, or, you know, that young lady who's won £100 is often the almost the red herring.
She's the wild card, isn't she?
She's the wild card. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I suppose the other thing is, if money is the barrier on something like the Orient Express or an aeroplane, I mean, more so on the Orient Express, it's still different from, for example, if it was a country house novel where, you know, and a mystery where probably the people at the country house are going to be relatives or going to be friends, and they're all going to be in a similar set. And you might have some people who stick out and maybe they're for a business reason. But it's not going to be, as you said, such a mixed bag as it could be on a train or a plane.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is that when Agatha was writing these stories, travel was the prerogative of the more wealthy. Long haul travel, I mean.
To a degree, I mean, you had Thomas Cook, didn't you, in the Victorian period, who was, you know, popularising it and making it a lot more accessible. But even so, it wasn't something that the man in the street could.
Which could I suppose is why when you start to look at some of the more modern stories like Girl on the Train or what have you, they're short journeys, aren't they?
Isn't it the commute?
Yes, on the commute, yeah. So it's a very short journey that is the sort of the impetus for the intrigue and the mystery, but it's not necessarily going to happen on the train. You know what I mean? With Agatha, everything happened in one place, on this train, on this long journey.
Yes.
Whereas with this one, like the strangers, the Patricia Highsmith one, they obviously do the planning to swap murders, these two people, but the murders don't happen on the train.
Yes. I mean, I suppose with Death in the Clouds, I mean, the murder does happen in the play, but it's quite a short journey. I think it's Paris to Croydon.
Oh, right.
Effectively. So it's quite a short time frame and it's all kind of compressed. But the thing is, of course, they've got to chase up the people afterwards who were on the plane to try and work out what the heck happened. Mm. So
far, Liz, we've talked about trains, planes, boats and spaceships.
Not automobiles yet.
No, I was going to say, what other forms of transport could we... Do we know of, or could we envisage being...
I'll tell you what, there was a tube train in the Bruce Partington plans, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
There you go, there's one.
Yeah.
And that was quite pivotal to the plot as well. Because it's a funny thing. Sherlock Holmes could have taken the tube a lot more than he did, instead of all these hansom cabs.
Oh, right. But hansom cabs are much more...
Because Baker Street, wasn't that like pretty much the first station?
Yes.
I think it was around from about 1850. Yeah. So, I mean, that well predates Sherlock. Yeah. So he could quite easily have been on the Northern Line or, you know, whatever the equivalent was, but didn't. Why is that, do you think?
I wonder why Conan Doyle didn't do that. It makes you wonder whether he felt that his readers would be more in tune with a hansom cab than they would be this new... underground system. Yes.
I mean, I suppose also with a hansom cab, I mean, you've got to get one.
Yes.
But assuming you live fairly near a cab rank, you can, like, you know, wave an arm and the cab, and then the cabbie is at your beck and call.
Cool.
And it's your own, like, personal transportation, so you can go door to door.
Yeah.
Which feels a lot more Sherlock style than, you know, buying a ticket from the ticket office,
right,
going down the steps, waiting for the train, squishing on, being like, people going, excuse me. Yep. You know, having to cope with a busker. Yeah. I can't really see that. You know, Watson getting his hat knocked off.
Yeah.
I might have to write one now with them on the tube.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. I wonder what anybody writing stories, murder mystery stories today, what mode of transport they might come up with that is out of the ordinary, something different.
Yeah,
I can't think of any off the top of my head that I've read or heard about. You know, it tends to be boats, planes, and trains on the whole.
Yes,
but you do wonder whether anybody's, maybe there's a story to be written. You know,
oh, I think there absolutely is. I think you're the person to do it, Mike.
Murder on a tandem.
It does. That would be very dangerous, and, you know, possibly worrying for oncoming traffic.
Yeah, it cuts down the number of suspects too, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Yeah, but a rocket maybe. Yeah.
I suppose in the same way that those trains would be used for, say, like the girl on the train, which was a commute.
Mm.
I've not heard of any sort of where the same thing has happened with sort of a bus. You know, when you think a number of people who commute and use buses to get from home to work.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, there'll be an awful lot of witnesses.
Yes. But I suppose they could see something. Like the girl on the train saw something. She saw a murder. Am I right in thinking that the murder didn't happen on the train, but she saw something suspicious?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say watch out for spoilers, but being as I've not read it, I don't
I've not. The pair of us are talking about.
Yeah, if we're completely inaccurate, please ignore this bit.
We haven't the foggiest.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, we know roughly what it was about.
Mm.
What about real crimes and murders on trains, boats, and planes?
Go on.
I mean, well, the obvious one is the great train robbery.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking about that earlier, and I was going to say. Mm.
Apparently, he got away with £2.6 million.
Wow.
It's worth of whatever it is they stole.
Mm. So what was how did that one go? The Great Train Robbery. I mean, obviously a train got robbed, but...
I think it was back in the day when the Royal Mail, I think it was a Royal Mail train. I might be guessing here. But I thought it was. Because it would have to be something that was carrying something of worth to be stolen, and it must have been something that was regularly done so that these people knew where to stop it and what was going to be on board.
Mm.
And that's because once upon a time, the Royal Mail trains were were quite popular, unlike mm-hmm. today, where I don't think, I don't know for sure, but I doubt if anything of any value is transported by trains nowadays. I might be completely wrong there, and that wouldn't be the first time.
No, I'm just having a quick look because I've looked it up. And yeah, apparently the gang tampered with the line's side signals to make the train stop. And then a gang of 15 people attacked the train.
What did they steal? Does it say?
It sounds like it was money. Cause it says right. The bulk of the stolen money has never been recovered.
Right.
After the robbery, the gang hid at Leatherslade Farm. The police found this hideout and incriminating evidence, a monopoly board with fingerprints.
Oh, right.
I wonder if they played with real money.
Yes, yes. I bet they did.
Yeah, well, you would, wouldn't you? Yeah. I mean, you know, when else are you going to do that? Led to the eventual arrest and conviction of most of the gang. So, yes, it was the overnight Glasgow to London mail train.
Oh, right. Apparently, in 1864, there was the Lincoln assassination plot.
As in
President Lincoln.
Oh, apparently it was that in a theatre?
That's when he was actually killed, I think.
Yeah.
This was just another assassination try. Yeah, gosh. But it was train related. Now whether I'm assuming
train related.
Yeah, I'm assuming it must have happened on the train or on a station. I tell you, it's serious. Talking about time. Sorry, talking about travel.
Yes.
And murder.
Mm.
And I'm just taking this whole topic of ours to the nth degree, as I do have a habit of doing sometimes.
I couldn't possibly comment.
I think I've mentioned before that I've been listening to Jodie Taylor's books.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, if you're thinking about travel.
The Time Police.
Yes, of course.
Now, there's some great stories there about murders and mysteries. They tend not to happen in the actual time travel machine itself.
No.
Which, when you read the stories or listen to the stories, sounds a bit like not much bigger than a wardrobe. They sound very small. But again, there's lots...
probably something to be written about wardrobe-sized devices.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. But moving yourself in space and time.
But lots of crime and murder-related mysteries that are linked into that aspect of time travel.
Mm. Yeah. So have you ever written anything set on a train, plane, automobile, rocket?
I don't where it was relevant. Think I have. Mm, no, I know you have, Liz.
I have, yes.
But no, I don't think I have. Mm-hmm. While you're reading something of yours, I'll have a quick look on...
Oh, I'm reading something, am I?
Well, I hope so, because it would give me a chance to...
No, I wasn't necessarily going to read anything.
Oh, weren't you? Tell us about... Because you've got... one of the amazing books is on a...
Yeah, All at Sea, set almost entirely on a cruise ship because it's set in the 1890s and our heroine basically has made London a bit too hot to hold her. I mean, she's been in, you know, a few scandals, shall we say, and her reputation isn't exactly spotless. And she's decided that she's sick of men and she is just going to go away and have an adventure instead, which is a very sensible thing to do. So she gets on a cruise ship bound for India. And of course, the first thing that happens is that she's horrendously seasick because they hit the Bay of Biscay, which is, you know, not good. I suppose the thing I kind of like about it is, again, it's that that closed little world. Because certainly at that point, you had your first class passengers and you had your second class and your third class, and they wouldn't mingle. You know, the first class people didn't go down into the rest of the ship.
No.
You know, and the only people who probably moved around at all were people who were, you know, servants of the people in first class who would, you know, go up and do their master's or mistress's bidding and then, you know, retreat back to their, you know, their bench or their, you know, communal room or wherever they were quartered and would have completely different food as well. But yes, and again, it's that sort of... Yeah, not quite a locked room mysteries. It's quite a big space.
Yes. Well, it reminds me, as you were talking then, but something like the film Titanic, which is very much a case of, it's more of a class love story, isn't it? You know, the upper decks and the upper class trying to avoid those who are the lower station, both physically and socially.
There's a bit where Maisie, my heroine, is in disguise and she gets into a bit of trouble and someone says, oh, do you think she came from down below deck and sneaked in?
Yeah.
So, yes. And again, I suppose the other thing I liked about it was the idea of motion, because the cruise ship, even if it's not going very fast, is constantly going somewhere. Mm. So you have the kind of the glamour of the stops on the way, because there were some good stops on her trip as well. She goes to Marseille. Egypt she misses. But yeah, there are various that they get to do. But also that feeling of, I've got to solve the mystery before we get to Bombay and everyone gets off the boat.
Yeah. So there's a timeline in there.
There's a time, yes. And the boats were getting pretty quick by then. But even so, yes, it's, I think they've got, I suppose, 2 or 3 weeks before they're going to hit land. Yeah. So
I suppose that's what makes them ideal settings for a sort of murder mystery, mm-hmm. is because there is a specific timeline. You know, it's setting off at one point and sometime in the future. Well, certainly back when you're talking about with Maisie and with Agatha Christie, a week, 2 weeks' time, they're going to reach their destination. And yet on board, you've got everything. You've got the kitchens where somebody could get poisoned. You've got cabins where they can get killed. You've got boats at night where they get flung overboard. You've got a full range of ways to dispose of people.
And you've got spaces, crannies, where people can socialise.
Yeah. And then you've got a boat full of suspects.
Mm.
Yeah. An ideal setting in many ways.
And also you've got the kind of, the meal times and, people round the table. Maisie naturally is on the captain's table. She wouldn't have it any other way. And so, again, she meets a crowd of people who are going for various reasons and doing different things. In that respect, those kind of closed spaces are dead interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. But yes. So what were you going to say, Mike?
I was just looking at my list here about famous train mysteries, for example, in film and TV.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's Hitchcock comes up.
Yes.
He's got a thrill about a woman disappearing on a train. Agatha keeps cropping up on these.
Mm.
But the various adaptations, which is an interesting one, because some of the notes I wrote down here, you've got the adaptations of Murder on the Orient Express. And you can look at the 1974 adaptation compared to the 2017.
Oh, the Kenneth Branagh one.
Yeah.
And so I have issues with that.
Yeah. But it's that difference, isn't it, between the different eras in which these things were made. It makes you wonder if anybody, maybe somebody has, whether somebody could take Murder on the Orient Express and translate it into a modern day Orient Express.
Mm. But would you want to?
But possibly not. I think the other problem you would have with that is that the modern day Orient Express, it's going to be a quicker journey.
Yes.
It would have to be a quicker murder.
Yes. Also the point that, people will have internet and stuff like
that's
that,
right.
Which is no fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Much easier to stop the trains and get police to come on board and investigate everything.
Yeah, someone will get their mobile out and then it'll be over, yeah. Or they'll snap a picture of something as it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the kind of charms about it, in that, things like Murder on the Orient Express, the characters still have the same, emotions and jealousies and motives, but there's that kind of charm that it captures and that sense of, a world that we don't have anymore, and the glamour of, and feeling special because you're on a special train, going on a special trip, visiting exciting, exotic places that, you've probably never seen.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays you can go on the internet and look at them.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one that came up on my list, and it's this is something I've not watched. It's I don't know whether it's a film or a TV series. It's called Snowpiercer. It was done in Snowpiercer.
Okay.
2013. And apparently it's a dystopian crime thriller set on a perpetually moving train.
Ooh, that sounds...
That sounds
sure
my
like...
cup of tea and not yours, I think.
I'm not sure I like the idea of a perpetually moving train.
Yes, Yeah, because you wonder why it's perpetually. It's like an ever ending. You know, if it's never stopping, how do you solve anything? I don't know.
How's it powered?
I don't know. It's dystopian, so anything's possible.
It's one of those. I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen it. Oh.
What's it like? Is it good?
It's good. The reason it's perpetually moving, it's because the world has like basically gone through an ice age, and it's basically like the train of like the last survivors of the Earth. And, like, so like the train's perpetually moving because, like, I can't remember the specifics. I just know that...
it just is.
It just is, yeah.
Fair enough. We won't interrogate that plot point.
That's as good a reason as anything. It is.
So is it a recommend then?
Yeah, definitely recommend.
There you go.
It, yeah.
Right, well, we've come away with a recommendation with something new to watch, so that's good. Have we anything else to add about trains, planes, automobiles, tube trains, spaceships, time machines, coracles? Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
In that case, I think we will call it good. Yeah. So thank you for listening. Okay. And please, if you have time, like, subscribe, do all those things. And also come and see us on the Only Murders in My Mind blog.
Yep.
Where you can find all sorts of things, including the new YouTube resources.
Yes, new YouTube shorts.
That's the one.
A series of 60-second shorts all about various aspects of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes. So you can fit one of those into even the smallest tube journey.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
And on that note, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me as well.
Bye for now.
You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music, In Peril, was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.